Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. Well, we had a lot of activity last week. Did a lot of midnight shows around the country, and they're over on Ustream. Just type in Fred Bell Show, and you will see them there. Good shows and stuff. So we're going to continue on now with last week's stuff that we were doing, and it should be kind of fun. Yep, lots of fun here, and we'll be then moving into some old radio shows. So here we go. There'll be just a slight overlap from last week.
Heal you. You got to heal yourself. What they are doing is they're acting as tools. You know, if you're repairing your car, you need a wrench to get the spark plugs out. It's the same thing in your body. If you've been wrenched by technological, you know, atrocities, what you're on this planet, this stuff is a healing aid, and your body will then, in the presence of its field, start to heal itself. Okay? And if you ever come to any lecture in this hall or any one of these shows, and some guy stands up here, a girl, and tells you their product will heal you, head for the back door. Because you have to heal yourself. That's one thing I got to make very clear. Okay? These things have a very, very dynamic effect. Okay, now I want you to come up here for a second now. Put that pyramid down and take your receptor off. We're going to test you now. Let me show you what pyramids do. Pyramids produce what's called a scalar wave field. A scalar wave field is a vacillation between your female energy and your male energy. You have a vacillation that occurs. If this goes askew, it will cause problems in your body. And unfortunately, the female energy on this planet has been askew for a long time. In Persia right now, in Persian women, there's a serious askew the way the females are treated over there. If you don't believe me, check it out. The women are just starting to get their rights back. But we have a thing called karma. Karma is, if I have a personality of one individual on this planet and nobody's around, then there's no personality. But if I put a person like a female or a male here, and she has a personality and I have a personality, and we come within each other, our aura fields touch, we have an interaction. That's karma. And if I bring one other person up here, we have a third field, a tertiary field, and we have what's called dharma, or racial karma, because now we can procreate the entire race. Okay? So this is the field energy that's gone wrong. I'll demonstrate that. We'll put your arm straight out. Make a fist. Now when I push down, resist. Okay, feel your strength? Okay. Now, when I push down again, resist. Resist. There you go. Feel it? Now watch when I put the pyramid like this. Put your arm back up. Resist. Try that again. I like that. Now what's that? That's the female energy, right? I'll just stay there for a minute, get charged up. That's how that works. It's called a scalar wave. The difference between the pyramid being upside down and the pyramid being right side up produces a field. And if you look on the receptor, for example, it has little pyramids on it. Some are right side up and some are upside down. So it's producing that field that's going this way and that field that's going that way, and they come together right on the bridge. Okay? So that what happens is we balance that field. We balance that field, it makes the body very powerful. Okay? So now what happens when I do this? Take that off. Okay, now relax. Don't go anywhere. How many of you know what Bostick PVC pipe weld is? Cool stuff, huh? Serious glue, right. Okay. Now we're going to hook her female and her male energy up. First of all, we're going to see how she does without any help. Get the stuff out of here. I don't want this shooting up in my face. Could ruin your whole day. Yeah, it's going now. Okay, put that on. Now, start breathing that stuff. Now, make a fist. You know, it's coming right out. Don't get it up in your nose to breathe it. Now, let's see where your strength is now. Oh, you're really shot now. Okay, now we relax. Put this thing on. Okay. Glue back up. Arm back out. Now, resist. Let's see what you can do now. Let's see how you do with that now. Let's see how you do with that. A little different, huh? Just a little bit. Okay, take it off now. That, you got one. So now you begin to see how these things work. Okay, go ahead and sit down. Stanford University, Dr. Glenn Raine, leading research medical scientist, says that we have made an observation in the human DNA with a thing we call non-Hertzonian waves, which have a pronounced effect on the human DNA reproduction cycle. Meaning that medical research at Stanford and other schools in the world now has discovered the prevalence and the necessity of balancing scalar waves and the fact they exist and the fact that they're non-Hertzonian, meaning they are not electromagnetic waves. Okay? Now, at this point, got a little, plenty of time yet. Does anybody have any questions on some of the things we're covering so far? Forever, as long as you're on this planet. I mean, someday it would be nice to throw this stuff out in the ocean or the river, but for a while we're going to need it, for quite a while, because we got to keep our immune systems built up. Okay? When you buy one of these things, you don't just get any one. We have to go and look at your hydrogen atom and find out what the weakest link, what the color frequency is that's weak. So we muscle test you, each individual, and find out where the color, the weak color is. Then you wear it. And you wear it every day. And you can wear it at night if you want, but daytime is good. Your body reproduces cells at the rate of 50 million per second, and the first entire cellular group that's reproduced takes 90 days, red blood cells. Okay? The last cellular group is your bones to be reproduced. When you're
end of that side. So what I'll do is I'll play a little bit more of the other side before I switch that tape off, as that some of you can hear that are new, the beginning of what happened last week. And I might add, this show is the date of this show, by the way, is the 28th of March, which I think I forgot to do at the beginning of the tape, which I normally do. Also, we sure and check our website at www.pyridine.com, as we've got the new professional series receptors coming momentarily online. So here we'll have a little bit more of the intro, just so you can get your feet wet with what last week's show was all about. You will hear Dr. Bell. He will walk up to the stage and he will grab that microphone and he'll continue on like there wasn't even a break in space and time, which is what he does. He's a space and time no-breaker, as they call him. So anyway, I'm waiting for him right now. He's a little bit slow getting up there, I think, today. Also, if you have questions, you can call us at 1-800-729-2603, as we have people during the week that answer questions, including myself, and help people out.
In your body.
Here we go again now.
With the influence of positive scalar wave technology, the missing color in the hydrogen is now healed, and your body genetically begins to change. Okay, people with, i.e., non-curable diseases suddenly notice the diseases are going away. Okay, so we have to test each color. Usually, what happens is with someone, after about 6 months, we'll end up changing the color of the stone because that link on the chain is now strong and we have to go to the next weakest link. So if you're like me, I went through 5 different color changes before I ended up with a stone that seems to be pretty consistent with me most of the time now. Now we make the receptors out of 3 different materials depending on what you want to spend. You know, what I call the economy model. We use cadmium and zinc. The biggest deficiency in the human body that we've found is zinc, okay, along with calcium. How would we discover that? We used to have, in the early days of research, in the 1970s, late early 80s, we had people actually wear bars of zinc. And we would weigh that zinc, and they'd wear it for a month, and we'd weigh it again and see how much their body would assimilate. And that began to teach us how that worked. From that, we determined how to make the first receptors. Now, cadmium, which is another metal we use, and the least expensive ones, absorbs radiation out of the body. And everybody's got plenty of it, believe me. Cesium-90, cesium-60, no, strontium-90, cesium-60. There's a whole list of what we call isotopes that are present in human bodies these days. So the normal receptor, you just maybe wash it off. Because, you know, if you ever get exposed to radiation, they tell you to get the clean water supply and take a bath, take a shower. So you rinse the thing off maybe every month or two. The second level of receptor that we make is advantageous in the fact that you don't have to change the receptor when you change the stone. You just change out the stone in it. We can change it for you. That's made out of sterling silver, a heavy, a very pure form of sterling silver. It, however, becomes radioactive in a period of usually within a week. And so when you first put it on and start wearing it, you might find after a week you're not getting the same results that you did when you first put it on. So you take it off and you rinse it off with water and you put it back on, and then you'll see that it starts to work again because the radiation is gone. And then we make an 18-karat gold one, which also has to be washed off, and then we make occasionally one out of solid platinum, which also has to be washed off. The higher frequency the metal, the more profound the effect of it. I've only sold a few platinum ones, and I don't recommend selling them to anybody. The people that wanted them were fanatics, and platinum made them even more fanatical. I can't really say it had a good result where it being worn. People go crazy wearing those things. I've had skeptics come up to me, and typically, and they don't believe in it. This is something that doesn't have a tube buried in it, it doesn't have a magnet on it. That can't work. So what I do is I'll put one on. I know it's bad for them. Let them wear it for a couple hours, and when they start flashing because they get an antigen rush, they'll bring it back. Usually I put a diamond on them because the diamond will cause you. It's just like eating niacin. When you put one on, you're not ready for it. It causes a histamine release in your body, and you swear you've taken niacin. And when you haven't, it can be a little scary. So we got ways of proving them to skeptics if they want to go for a little bit of a ride. So any other questions? I just wanted to... Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Yeah, the question she asked, does the effect stop when you take the pyramid off? And the answer is yes, but in lesser and lesser amounts. Because remember we did the rubbing here, right? You got the feeling going. If you walked around doing this all day long and started doing this to your entire body, you'd be surprised after a few weeks of this how much better you'd feel. But also you'd feel a lot of drain. You'd be a little bit more drained because you're recirculating your own energy. So if you grab one of these antennas and start using some of the outside energy coming off the Earth's field, it will begin to build up a higher frequency. So if you've been wearing a receptor for 2 or 3 weeks and then take it off, it's a gradual going down, or a pyramid. But a lot of people, including me, I was not very sensitive. The way I became sensitive to this was the urine thing in the toilet with the cigarettes. I am now, but in the days this thing came out, I was not what you call a sensitive person. You know, after behaving the way I did, in those days I barely knew what a vitamin was, you know. So, I mean, I was a rocket scientist, not a nutritionist, you know. And so I could build you the hell of a rocket motor, but I couldn't tell you much about nutrition. But working in clinics and finally I got a degree in medicine, then I began to understand. And this is over 30 years, you know. So, yeah, go ahead. No, it's not a bad question at all. The book, The Promise, okay, downstairs, the little book, is a whole story. It's a whole story written by Brad Steiger about my experiences with the Pleiadians, okay? As far as this point, yeah, here, this is what it looks like. This is a pretty much nonfiction, but it's a novelized form of what happened, how I had my first contact. To make a long story short, I was doing all these exercises that we were doing now without any pyramids or without any receptors. As a matter of fact, I was studying metaphysics of the pyramid at the time when I was at NASA. And I mean, I was very orthodox, very straight. I was an Ivy League scholar. So I had a bit of an attitude than people that weren't educated. In other words, I was a snob. Okay? I wasn't very proud of my personality in those days. And when I had the contact, I had gone through a buffer with these Tibetan teachers and these Indian teachers that I had, and they began to break me down and make me realize I was basically an idiot. I wasn't smart at all. I might have had some brain power in the science department, but the rest of me really wasn't much to talk about And gradually they took me apart. They basically destroyed me. You know, what else can I say? Scared the hell out of me. And then they got me into the pyramids. And I had no idea that I was ever going to be standing up giving a lecture on pyramids. I had no clue. I had no plans. You know, when I left NASA, I didn't know what I was going to do. I had enough money to live 10 years. But I didn't know. But I knew I was going to run out sooner or later the way I spent money. And I had to go get a day job again. And it ended up with pyramids. So they built my intuitive powers up. And believe it or not, I got a call from a lady named Kathy Goggins. This was many years ago, about 1973. At 4 o'clock in the morning, she calls me up and says, I heard about blah, 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 and this and that. And I'm going to court to get a divorce and custody of my kids. Can you give me a blessing? And I says, where is this coming? This lady's calling a rocket scientist who's a student of the life at this point. For this, I says, everything's going to be fine. You know, I just said, you're going to go to court and you're going to blaze through this thing and it's going to be the easiest day of your life. I don't know what else to say. Well, she called me that afternoon about 2 o'clock and she says, you know what? You're right. You're really smart. And she says, what are you doing with your life right now? And I says, I don't really know, you know. And she says, well, I own this company called Pyramid Power 5. And they were making a wooden pyramid kit, a science kit. This is how we got into making pyramids over the bed. And basically, this wooden science kit, you'd buy it. It was a box, and you put this pyramid together. You had a compass, because in those days we didn't have gold pyramids. And you had two boxes of shrimp eggs. And you'd dump these shrimp eggs in water, put them under the pyramid, and dump some other shrimp eggs in another container, and grow shrimp. And what happened? It's pretty cool. The shrimp in the pyramid would live to be over a year, because the pyramid blocks radiation, like when you sleep at night. And the pyramid, the ones over here, without any, you know, container pyramid over them, lived 6 to 8 weeks and they all died. So I went to work for her selling pyramids for department stores. I mean, a degreed rocket scientist as a salesman in the department stores with these pyramid kits. That's what I was reduced to at this point because I was fascinated by the phenomenon. And that's how I got into it, you know. It's just a regular box, you know. Oh, I mean, I have, but in it, I have all these systems, you know. We have tons and tons of these big systems that we make. We make, I mean, you get me, I mean, I would love to get up here and talk about with the Pleiadians. Yeah, go ahead. Throw them at, so I'm going the wrong way. You what? Yeah, you hide it, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, it works fine. I've designed pyramid-shaped houses and temples, and I'll jump down here. I'll show you some stuff here. See, when we came to this show downstairs, we're in booth 79. If you look next to our booth there, there's booth 78. You see a big white pyramid over the Maitreya booth or whatever he calls himself. It's Ron Spencer. I started him off. All that stuff up there is all my inventions. You know, a lot of people take credit. All these things that are worn around the neck and all these different people that sell them, this is who started them over here. Pat Flanagan and I were the original ones back in the 70s. We made a disc. You know, that was our first one. Then we, with the help of the Pleiadians and the contacts I had, we got into this. And then we went for years, and now people are out there making little things that they claim do different things, but we were the ones that started the whole field. It is. Oh, this has a U.S. patent on it. You better believe it. Hell yeah, we went right through the patent office on this. It took 2 years. We're the only ones that have patents, by the way, that are real patents. So much stuff. All these charts. Here we go. This is a pyramid that goes over your bed. Okay. How many of you, when you go to bed at night, you go to sleep and you get that jumping sensation? You get that? You ever get that? Okay, you know why you get that? Because what happens is, when you go to sleep at night, right, your body, you're laying there in bed, hands down there, your body, you're getting off your spine, okay? You're getting off your spine. So your body gets about an inch taller. And what happens is, you have three different nervous systems in your body. You got a parasympathetic nervous system, which is your psychic area of your body. which is your psychic power when you develop it. You've got your autonomic nervous system, which is the, makes your heart beat and you don't think about it. And you've got your sympathetic, which tells you hot, cold, appetite, etc. You have an aura field that comes up and goes around your body. You know, I'm skipping around somewhere. I've got to go back to that original slide here in a minute. You guys got me going all kinds of directions. Your aura field increases 2 inches at night as soon as you lay down for the first 2 hours of sleep. And why it's doing that is your body is detoxifying. Your liver, organs, all that heavy poison in your body is supposed to be coming out of your body. Do you ever notice that sometimes if you go to sleep and something wakes you up and you've been sleeping, you're all hot and sweaty, but then when you get up in the morning, you're cool and calm and everything? That's because all these poisons are being generated and your body generates a thing called interferon, an enzyme, that cleans your body out. Well, what happens is your aura extends 2 inches out and here comes a taxicab, a cell phone. Something comes along and so it zaps your aura field. So your body has to protect itself from neuronic damage, so it pulls itself back in. So the body is actually, the spine is actually coming back together. But when you're laying there relaxed and this happens, you feel this effect because your body is doing this. You feel like something pulls you, like you're falling, and you grab or you flail in the air. That's what's happening. When you put the pyramid over, this is what fascinated me at Pyramid Power 5. It stops all that. That's why we make these things. Then, after 2 hours, what you should do is your body should now extend out your aura field 13 feet or more. When it extends out 13 feet or more, you go into your astral body, which was, we talked about, the sixth level of consciousness, and you start moving out in the astral plane to touch souls that you know in this life, other lives, teachers, or whatever. A lot of people don't get that. When you start to do that, it's called rapid eye movement sleep. If that process is interrupted with too much shaking, too much radiation, you gradually go crazy. It's another form of insanity that we experience on this planet. I'm going to have to backtrack. I'll show you a couple other things here. Oops, just slide projector down. What? Contacts? Physical. Yeah, physical contacts. Yeah, when I had my first contact, it was in 1971. The ship came. I lived on a place called Nestall Road in Laguna Beach at that time. It was a very little town. It was only 7,000. Now it's 100,000, so there's a big difference. And it was very interesting where that was because how many of you heard of a guy named George Adamski? He was an original contactee. A few of you had. He made his original contact in 1924 on that same hill, almost on that same street. So I'll show you a couple other things here. This is something that we make. It's called a star orb. This is for ELF. It explains it in the book. You put this up in the corner of your room, and what you do is you run a little wire down into the plug, and it takes all the negative energy that comes into your room and grounds it out into the plug, and you run another plug wire down outside into the ground. So on that, I think, what do you have, a two-plug system over here on these? In England, is it two plugs, right? Two prongs. It's three? Oh, it's three. Well, then you're in good shape. If it's three, you take the ground plug. That's where the ELF comes in. The ground is where the ELF comes out of. It goes into your room. So you ground that to the star orb, and you put the other wire outside. So you have one wire where that disappears off the top, going out into a pipe or going down into the ground into a stake, and a second wire going into a plug in your room. It's the ground. And then what happens when ELF comes in, it releases a synchronicity scalar wave into the room and transmits it out over the room. Now, my big clientele for these type of devices is the Japanese. When I went to Japan a number of years ago for the first time, I introduced this to a company called Kawasaki. Now, those guys, I didn't give them any more of an explanation than I'm giving you right here. I mean, because it was only a one-day seminar. There were other Japanese companies there. But I just explained to them, I said, you take this device, you know, I had an interpreter. So I wasn't even speaking directly at them. I had to go through an interpreter, so some of it got lost. So I said, you take this device into your room where you think, and you hook it up like this, and thoughts get better and creativity goes up. That's all I told them, you know. Okay, Mr. Vett, we'll try one of those. And they did, and they buy them all the time now. You know, They didn't know how it worked. They just hooked it up like I showed them, and boom, all of a sudden they started thinking clearly. This is one of our most popular devices, this thing here, Star Orb. This is a larger version of it. And this is called an irradiator. And this is how we got hooked up with Tenzin Gyatso, the current Dalai Lama. My friend Ron Spencer, who has that booth next to me, had one of these systems set up in Hawaii in 1981, and it went on the inter-island television. The Dalai Lama saw it, sent one of his monks over to check it out. He got in the field of it, and I'll skip down here to the one we actually used, and decided he really liked it. This is all explained in the book. I just want to show you maybe the system that we used over there. And so he ended up, this is interesting too. I don't know, I have to darken the room a little bit. We also, Sumyasi told me we could photograph scalar waves, and the system was the best way to do it with infrared film. So in 1979, we succeeded in filming a scalar wave. Now, in this photograph here, it's this white thing that's coming out. I think the next one is a little bit better. So the Dalai Lama, when he came over to Ron's system, ended up taking Ron to India, where he lives, and had him, there it is. I can focus that a little bit better. Now you'll actually see the scalar wave. It's right here. Can you see it? There, and there, and there, and there. It's coming off this irradiator, which is sitting over here, and everything is a weird color because it's infrared film. He said that science, and this is him talking, not me. He said a long time ago in the Vedic science, they had the Vedas, and this technology was used in Atlantis in many places. And he said just prior to the second coming, and this is once again his words, that these systems would be used all over the world, again as they were before, except for peace now and not wars. Because these things can get pretty nasty if you use them the wrong way. So sure enough now, they're starting to get pretty much all over the place again. They might be new to you guys, but this is a system that Ron had set up. This is called a Systems 3. And there's seven of these big irradiators in a circle, and they're all lined up to magnetic north. And then we have a very large pulsating DC power supply that feeds them to create what's called a virtual field. Okay, now remember that term, virtual field, okay, because we're going to go clear back to that first slide, and I'm going to explain a little bit about virtual fields. We've still got a little time yet. Amazing, but usually I can only get 2 hours in them, but this expo here gives us three. And that's pretty good. We get 3 hours in. If you were to look at, this is a drawing of the virtual field. And if you look at it from the top, like if you're looking down at one of these irradiator systems, you'll have different pulsating frequencies which correspond to different petals on the lotus in the chakra system. You know, you have 960 up here and you got four down at the base of the spine. Well, a lot of people don't understand what that means. They know that there's something to this and they've heard of it. But what this means is that when these systems are set up properly, it pulses the body with the curvature of the circulation of the Earth around the sun. Because remember, we're moving 1,000 miles an hour right now through space. And we're getting fields from the Pleiades and Orion and the Great Bear. And these fields, when they cross through these irradiators send scalar waves out. And these scalar waves start producing what are called virtual fields. And the different number of lotus petals, whatever you'd call it that, on the chakra system correlates to different frequencies in the body. And the summation of those frequencies can turn you into a spaceship. And you can do things like Yogananda did. How many of you know who Paramahansa Yogananda is? Okay, he demonstrated in 1952 conscious exit of the body. Right, he in front of 800 people, he basically sat down, went into the lotus position, and died, and stayed warm for 30 days. If you're not familiar with him, or you can astral, or you can, you know, another one of my clients is TM of America, Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, and we use these for levitation because you can overcome gravity when you go into virtual fields. And then if you want to learn compression wise how that is, you can look at the last chapter on electrogravity in here, and you can see how we take the same technology that we can put in your living room and liquefy or make plasma out of these chakra fields and produce what are called hydrodynamic waves and create a spaceship that allows you to go into hyperspace drive. All this is explained in the book, okay? Which is was all taught to us by the Pleiadians. So they gave us some pretty good technology. Now I'm going to go back this slide. Sure, go ahead. Yeah, I'm not going to go to that slide, but yeah, time travel is chapter 39 in my book. I built a time machine. Yeah, you can actually do that stuff. And I'm trying to think who's done that. You had a question, too? Yeah, it did. Yeah, and that was, I mean, you got to understand, we've been going around in Pleiades for a long time. We're just talking about the last 26,000-year cycle. We can go into mining operations and find geodes made out of amethyst and find little spark plugs and motors buried in them that were formed a million years ago. We've been an up and down pulsating society for millions of years. So this is nothing new. But what we got to do is get our retention in a little better. We got to remember some of this stuff. You know, what I always say, and it's a pretty common expression, is if you don't understand history, you'll repeat it. And that's exactly what seems to be going on at a societal level. This is all breaking down, but I'm going to go all the way back now. You see these charts on these scalar waves and these nodes and all of this stuff. I want to go way back here, because this is all explained inside the book. That's the nice thing about having this book now. It saves me a lot of talking. I don't have to get hoarse anymore. Going way back to that first slide, because I'm going to take you right through it now. It's going to take a minute. That's all the DNA stuff. That's the sound stuff that we cover. How sound compression works. Black holes cover all that stuff. And DNA relationships. How we create earthquakes. That's all in there. We create all these weather problems we have. We create them ourselves. Yeah. Yeah, we're going back to that now. I've been to a lot of colleges, and they're very much into it. And the superpowers right now are a little bit worried because we're not doing so well with these galactic battles that we're fighting. So there is a lot of concern. Let me just jump back down into the human side of it again. Now, we've been up and down this chart quite a bit. Okay, we jump in here. We have the seven endocrine glands that are seven levels of consciousness. And then what releases those seven, these endocrine glands up to the brain are electrical precursing energies. Remember, we talked about EPCs. We are biochemical. We are electrical. We've talked about electricity. We've talked about biochemistry. The EPCs, the positive ones that are good for you, good sounds, lights, colors. We do a lot with lasers. We do a lot with sound, like I was telling you about. Gemstones, minerals we use here. I'm sure a lot of you that carry crystals around, we mine them in Arkansas, these crystals. Stellar vibration. There's good influences coming from the Pleiades. You know, you can as it says in what is that? Forget is that you should is it Job? You can be set free by the sweet influences. Sweet influences of the Pleiades are bound down by the belts of Orion. That's how that scripture goes. I got it quoted out in there. You go down to the seashore. You get negative ions when the waves hit. You know, which is called the Lennard effect. Wind blowing through trees creates pine needles, you know, and all that kind of thing, negative ions. Or you can go the other way, crowd noise, sirens, jets, stress, radiation of all sorts, chemicals in our food. All of these things end up causing hormones of one type, shape, or nature or another to go into the bloodstream, okay? You go into the bloodstream. Now, the endocrine glands are not glands that have valves on them. You turn them like a spigot, and they go and it dumps into the endocrine, the hormone, into your blood. They don't work that way. They work by osmosis, and they work by relaxation. Okay, they're called capillaries, and so you have to relax these glands with soothing music, good sounds, that kind of stuff. So then what happens is they end up going up to the brain. And when they get up to the brain is basically fairly simple. They try to make the brain so complicated in science, but it's not all that complicated. The brain is like a battery with a switch on it. Remember we talked about the electrolytes down here? Okay, the electrolytes are the same as the battery. The battery got two posts. You cross that post with a starter motor, and the starter motor draws current negative to positive, and the starter motor turns over and your car starts. Same thing happens here. You got two posts. In this case, there's two sets of posts. You've basically got four posts. The first type is a switch that's normally open, and the hormone comes along and shuts it, and that's called a receptor. Then you got another switch that's already conducting, and the hormone comes along and stops the flow of electricity, and that's called an effector. So you got turning on and turning off of two switches in your brain with electrolytes present. Then you have 72,000 major wires going up and down through your body to the endocrine system. And what happens is, anytime electricity moves through a wire, you're always going to have magnetism at right angles. So when you start stopping currents that are already flowing and starting currents that aren't, you start creating a magnetic field around your body. Depending on the seven levels of consciousness, whether we be in love, compassion, thought, dreaming, this causes a modulated cloud or a field effect to come on here, which then starts taking this electromagnetic field and driving it up in frequency. Now, in the process of driving it up in frequency, if we have the right nutritional programs, in my nutritional programs, I put sodium, potassium, and phosphorus in my nutrients, along with trace minerals, and these Fotai, ginseng, and Gotu-Koa. So what happens is, if I've got 10 volts of electrolyte solution right here, it takes hardly any resistance to get this flowing up and down through the body. Okay? If a person is not taking nutritional products, is putting a lot of junk and chemicals in their body, this 10 volts won't be in the brain, it's probably about 1 volt, and the resistance to get through this dying nervous system is terrible. So they have basically an aura field with holes in it. Okay, you follow the difference. So what we do is we start creating a very high-powered central nervous system with a very high-powered switching circuit in the brain. We start creating fields that we can introduce into a concert, like music. And so we can start creating virtual fields in that concert, which then allows you to perceive other dimensions and other times, and so that way you can work towards going there. For example, humans only hear about 300 or 400 cycles hertz to maybe 16,000 cycles or hertz. But a dolphin, on the other hand, can hear from DC to almost 200,000 cycles per second. Why can a dolphin do that? Because he's living in, or has been living in, an environment. Not anymore. Dolphins are going deaf now, but they weren't. The dolphin has a very fluid system that in the sound region, he can switch these synapses at a very high perceptive rate and hear, obviously, a very sensitive ear and a very sensitive perception of sound. Same thing with sight. A contactee, like myself, has developed a very acute vision. I can go out here in the sky at night and there's something out there, I'll spot it immediately. And if I see something for 2 seconds, to me it's like seeing it for hours, because I've been trained how to develop that acuity. Whereas somebody else who is probably colorblind because they've got such a low frequency, and all the eyes do is they perceive. The eyes don't magnify anything. They just perceive what's there, and they sensitize parts of the brain behind the fovea, which is the optic part of the eyes. In the fovea section, that becomes highly sensitized, and the light frequencies start going beyond the visible spectrum. Now, if you go into light studies, like in my book, I show the visible spectrum. You know, it's in nanometers or angstrom units. And humans see from a certain angstrom unit to a certain angstrom unit. But when you develop yourself, you can see way beyond that. Now, when you start seeing way beyond that, now your virtual capacity has expanded. And if I happen to be in a room and there happens to be an angel present, I got a good shot at seeing that angel or making communication with it, whereas somebody else can barely see the back wall. And glasses isn't going to solve the problem. So you start extending your potential to create virtual fields. Now, what did we do with this research? Well, I did a lot of research in the very beginning with a lot of yogis. For example, I've had guys come into our laboratories at different universities I've worked. I worked at University of Hamburg down here. I worked at UCLA, Columbia, New York, a lot of places, University of Michigan. We get a yogi in there. We're right near biochemistry. We're digesting our food or drink and whatever we had today. We're breathing air in. We're producing electricity in our bodies from the air that we're breathing in. But we're really, in order to animate and perceive consciousness, we're really relying a whole lot on the lower stuff down here. These guys, we put them in a container, like a coffin, throw them in a swimming pool, shove them down there for 10 or 15 hours. There's no air in there. Nothing. They go into a higher state of consciousness, create a virtual field, and get all their substance from inner levels, from the hydrogen atom on inner levels without external stuff. That's amplifying the sensitivity of your virtual field. Or we'll get them to stop their heart. Well, I'll stop my heart for 5 minutes. You try stopping your heart for 5 minutes and see how long you last. But these are human beings that are here that have proven, they're called siddhis, they're exercise motions, and they can do this kind of stuff because they've reached a high level of existence. When you have that kind of power, you can walk down the street and get all the radiation you want. And we have a thing called auric offset, which if you don't get this book, my little receptor book explains it, how you can take all that stuff in and convert it into something that's usable and not let it wipe out your immune system and destroy your consciousness. That's the bottom line, okay? And that is possible. It doesn't happen overnight, but you take it a step at a time. Because where are you going to go to get rid of this? You can't even die right now and get rid of it. You'll just come right back in a younger body and you'll just have to learn the basic lessons all over, and it's going to be hard to make a difference when you're laying there in your crib screaming for some milk or whatever, when as now you can suffer a little bit and make it possible for your next incarnation to be a little bit more habitable to this world than it is now. So that's your motivation, you know. Pleiadians, what? Quite a few. Let me tell you some things about the Pleiades, because this is what you wanted to hear anyway, okay? I didn't cover this because I don't have enough time. When the mother's pregnant, okay, the first thing is formed. Anybody know what's formed first in the body? Brain, right? The brain starts to form. And the stem, the heart, and the circulatory system. So brain, nervous system, heart, circulatory system. Why is this? Well, let's look at the body. The red blood cell is a iron atom. It's eight of them. Four of them. It's eight upside down. It's one this way, one that way, repeated four times. Eight pyramids. Iron. Iron's magnetic. Okay? As soon as the blood starts to flow, the soul of the being that's going to incarnate goes down into the fetus of the mother, starts moving in. Okay? The frequency of that soul galvanizes the brain. Synapses are firing. Okay? A little brain is working, the central nervous system is working, that heart is beating, and the blood is moving, and the blood is galvanizing from the synapse frequency, electromagnetic response of that little brain, which is the first thing created. And so it's creating the rest of the body in the image of the soul, that particular soul. And that particular soul, as soon as the fingers start to form or the digits on the body start to form, that galvanization forms an imprint in the flesh, and we call it fingerprints. Okay? And everybody's different, like snowflakes. Everybody's different. That's the way, and so what happens is we identify the children on this planet when they're born by their different fingerprints. We categorize them. We use it in our criminal system and passports and every other place we can go with it. Okay? Pleiadians are a little different. Their technology is such that they have gotten way into virtual fields, like we're going there, you know. And in these virtual fields, they have learned to connect with disincarnated souls before they're incarnated, before the mother even gets pregnant. They can map these things, okay? Usually, though, the mapping process starts as soon as the mother becomes fertile or pregnant, rather. Not fertile, but pregnant. Okay, because that pattern that's on the mother's aura, before even the brain starts to form in the fetus, is a pattern that these Pleiadians know exactly who it is. Now, that technology or that lifestyle was brought here with the Rishis, and the Dalai Lama is the living expression today, and in Japan, the Shadow Master over there, which comes every 438 years. And these are documented by societies as being living incarnations of the previous, and on and on and on. So as a result, the Pleiadian society, when somebody, and we don't do death and birth here worth a damn, okay? We do it all wrong, okay? When somebody dies here, and I've lost a sister, so it's not easy because we're emotionally hooked to this and we're not spiritually always there. Emotions get in the way. If somebody dies here, we should realize that is a giving up process and they're going to a higher frequency. And we should have a funeral when somebody is born because look what they're coming into, okay? If you apply that to a society like the Pleiades, somebody gets killed. Yeah, they still mourn about it. Like Sannyasi, the one that I worked with, her husband was killed. But they, you know, Pleiadians, by the way, because they don't have this kind of stress, live 1,500 years in one life. And whereas, you know, we are 10 decades of 10 experiences, they live 1,500 years. She lost her husband when she was 26 years old. He got killed in a space accident. That affected her. But it didn't destroy her. Because she knew that her husband would incarnate at a certain time somewhere in the Pleiadian system. Because they do. That's their ring pass. Not like we have the moon in the center of the earth. They have their entire system because that's where they go to. If we were going all around, we would too. And those of us that do go around like that probably will be broken away from here and we'll be out there. We'll come back as inquiring incarnates in a later life. So what happens is a child is taught in school for 120 years of its first incarnation. Okay? And he gets the equivalent of about 15 PhDs on Earth. One of the first things the child is taught is about reincarnation and the immortality of the soul. Second thing it is taught is about family values and family identity. The third thing it learns that if it wants to, and society respects that, after the first two lessons, lesson three would be is this child can now go out and seek out its biological parents from the past lifetime or possibly the last husband or a sister or whatever, if the child determines that to be necessary, and usually they don't. And they can then continue on with their lessons of what their missions in life are all about. So the society doesn't have the stress. They don't fight over land and this, and they don't fight over dharmic values because 400 years ago, this group came in and kicked us out, and now we got to kill this guy, and he killed my sister, and I'm going to kill his brother. It doesn't work, you know. Eye for an eye is a blind race, right? They don't live that way. They live differently. These are the lessons that are here now. These are the lessons that we can all start to live. Basically, you're going to have to. You're going to go over and over and over again with this until you get these lessons down. And the technologies they have, my God. We have a thing in that I used to teach in yoga called a trispasso. A trispasso is where you do fire breathing, like we were just doing here. Except you sit in a lotus position on the ground, and you sit there, and you sit across from somebody, and you have your left eye is on their left eye, and you do 100, 500, and 1,000 fire breaths, and then you let your air out, and you feel that electromagnetic virtual field build up, and you do an eye contact, which is called a trispasso, and you go through what's called a transfiguration, and you experience each other, male to male, male to female, or female to female, probably 100 lifetimes, first time you sit down and do that. Okay, we do that here. We have those kinds of things where we teach. To enhance that, a system like I'm showing you really makes the environment change. The right kind of music makes it change. On Era, which is Sannyasi's home world, they have a thing called an S-curved flute. This is a flute, like how beautiful. Flute is one of my favorite instruments. I play clarinet, but I'd love to play a flute. I can't get a sound out of it. It's not my instrument. It's not my axe, as we say it. An S-curved flute is two players sit across from one another, look into each other's left eyes, and synchronize their breath with this beautiful flute so you can get trills back and forth, and they create that subcarrier wave. When they start getting that subcarrier wave, light, as we know it here, liquefies like a laser light, comes right out of the ethers and liquefies. And you can see light moving around, these beautiful colors around in the room where they're playing. Okay? Talk about cultural values. This is the kind of stuff they do. Like I say, the sitar was a very old instrument. It's 28,000 years old, 26,000 years on this planet. What, you still hear that sitar, even in music today. That's a pretty popular instrument. It's one of the oldest ones on this planet. The piano's been around, the harpsichord, even in England. I think they invented them over here. They've been around for a long time. But there are cultural things that if we get out of the squabbling, the values that we can establish, it's just amazing. It's just totally amazing, you know. And being a contactee, when I'm not in contact, and I haven't had much contacts, so actually they stopped about 3 years ago and said, we won't cut you off until this book is done because it's going to displace your creativity. Yeah, do you have a question?
Where
what? Well, that's a good question. You're God. You know, you are God. You really don't want to know where God comes in. Let's put it this way. Creation is eternal. It's forever. Okay? Didn't start, won't stop. But everybody in this room, sometime, and you can come back and tell me if I'm wrong, and I don't know what time frame, it's very long after this solar system's gone, this star is dead, everybody in here will get to experience God. And I know one thing about experiencing God. In other words, becoming the omnipresent consciousness, omniscient consciousness of everything. That consciousness creates upon itself ignorance to manifest itself again and again within smaller forms to keep from being the loneliest thing there is in the universe. Okay, you learn that from the Brahmins. So, I wouldn't worry about it because God is something that the human mind could never understand. It's more than the seven levels of consciousness. It's a source of the seven levels of consciousness and beyond. And I'm not an authority on God, but I have been shown God consciousness by the Andromedans. Andromedans live 5,000 years. And all I can say is, after 19 years of fun with the Pleiadians, the Andromedans, which are very friendly, scare the hell out of me anytime I'm near them. They show me things that I don't even want to know about because the experiences are so out there that you really don't want to know that that's how things are. And it's nothing to be afraid of. It's nothing to be afraid of. It's just something you don't really need to concern yourself with right now. You know, and we don't have to start fighting over what our concepts of God are because there really is no concept of God. Because by the time that you become God, God might have changed. You might have decided to change God around into something else. God is infinite in what its expression is. So you really can't put a handle on it. It's a cool force to understand, but from our point of view, it's best left alone. We've got too much to worry about down here. And when you begin to think like that, each day is very valuable. The show is going to end. I'll go down to booth 79. Thank you very much. Huh? Oh, yeah, we'll go down there.
Well, that pretty much wraps up that one. Next week will be some more. I mean, I did do a bit of a repeat on that, so that those of you that didn't get it all last week, I decided, you know what, just let's run this thing all the way through because it's a pretty good string of information rather than breaking it up. So like I say, we have a lot of new things, new products on the web and everything. And so with that, we'll close her off for the evening. Listen to the regular show Thursday, 5 p.m. Pacific, bbsradio.com, where you're at now, and simulcast on Ustream TV. See you next week.